You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
What's going on, everybody? I am very sick Joe O'Brien. Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It is Wednesday, October 16th, 2024. And I'm here with my good buddy, Troy LaValle. We're struggling.
Are you smoking? Did you smoke a pack of menthols this morning?
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like I got up, I had my normal 8 cigarettes and a cup of coffee. Yeah, you know, the weather changed here in New York. It happened. It is officially fall. And we got back from L.A. It was 85 degrees. We land, and it's 45 back here. And it has gone immediately into my lungs, and I have pneumonia is the only possible explanation. Yeah, no, it has happened. I've got some last night in the middle of the night. I kind of woke up. I don't have a sore throat or anything. It is just all in my chest. I like woke up, but I was like, you know, when you breathe and you hear like the rattling, like inside, like your chest. I was like, oh dear, there's something in there. And so yeah, I'm not feeling. I feel fine actually. It's just my voice is terrible.
Yeah, it sounds pretty rough. It's good. It's good voice for radio, though. It's got some character to it.
Yeah, I could do some commercials now.
Yeah, peanut butter and velvet, baby.
So this past week, I was watching, for the first time, I sat and watched Monday Night Football, only the Manning cast.
I haven't done that yet. I don't know why. Yeah. I don't know why I'm listening to Joe.
I always kind of like check
Troy
in, and I never like just sit and watch the whole thing, but it was like, you know, if it was an Eagles game, I wouldn't be doing that, but I was sitting there, watched the whole thing. It was great. And Will Arnett was on, and he was amazing and hilarious, and his mic work was so funny because he just did a couple times. He did impressions of either movie trailers or he did like a pharmaceutical commercial for like, you know, for Peyton's forehead. It's like, is your forehead too high? Blah, blah, whatever. And he just nailed it like a commercial read because, you know, he is an excellent VO actor as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Anyway, got me thinking of Will Arnett's sultry tones, dulcet tones. How you feeling, buddy? It's been a rough couple weeks for you. Still struggling.
Yeah, it's real bad, man. That's why Cannon Fodder's late. I made it through L.A. and Portland, but I came back and I was like, ooh, man, I'm sore. And then I slept okay the first night. And by okay, I mean maybe more than 3 hours, which has been my average for the past 3 weeks. And then the next night back, I don't know what it was. I didn't sleep. I maybe slept 30 minutes the whole night. And so I woke up yesterday. We're supposed to record fodder. We're supposed to do a lot of things. And I was I'm completely brain dead because the back pain, the nerve pain is just so fucking bad. So I had physical therapy yesterday. I can't even talk to the physical therapist. I'm like, my muscle hurt. You know, so like my brain just is not functioning. But that helped. And I was able to get like a solid 3.5-4 hours last night, which is amazing. So I'm like, I'm ready to go today. A couple cups of coffee.
Well, we think that you're about a week out, right? We think you're about a week out from getting a pain killing shot that should put this to bed for a bit.
Yeah, I got an appointment today with the pain management doctor. It's fucking red tape. You know what I mean? Like, everybody bitches about the American healthcare system, but it's just like, I mean, you just got to jump through fucking hoops. And I'm saying to the nurse, I'm like, my pain is at a 15 out of 10. And you're telling me I got to set up an appointment for here to maybe get an appointment a week later. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I'm like, I say this to a lot of customer service people. I know it's not your fault that this is happening, but I'm very angry and I need help. Yeah. So I'm hoping that this will lead to recovery. And the PT is really helping because at the end of the day, like the corticosteroid shot is going to relieve the pain, but I have to rebuild my core and I have to you just get like the more I focus on re-strengthening my core, the more pressure it's going to take off of the nerve. And I'm like, how do obese people like survive? I said to my physical therapist, like, how are they not breaking everything every day? And the physical therapist was like, because they just sit on the couch all day and eat. And so they're not putting themselves through strenuous activity. He's like, you went, started going back to the gym. You're working out 3 days a week. You're doing all this stuff. Like, if you're not focusing on stretching, core exercises, you know, enough lower body exercises, like, you're not, that this is what's going to happen as you get older. Like, I cannot wait to get better because I just want to like redo everything in my life. Cause I'm pretty, you know, especially this year, like I felt like I, after my hernia surgery, I gained a ton of weight and like, you just feel shitty in the holidays and everything. And then like, of course we have the added thing of being like public figures and you go online enough and see people be like, wow, Troy got fat. I feel so bad for poor women that got to deal with this body image shit all the time. Cause I'm like, I don't let things bother me, but you see enough internet people call you fat. You're like, man, that really sucks. I know I'm fat. Leave me alone. So I go into this year being like, all right, let's get this party started. Let's get back to my fight and weight. And I just really, I dropped 30 pounds. I bulked up. I really like, I've been working out like a madman, taking care of myself, eating clean. And then like, boom. Back broken, can't move. And it's just having three kids, 6, 3, and 1 year old with my poor wife. It's just a really rough time. And I have to keep, my wife and I have to keep telling ourselves like, this is temporary. Cause I feel like we're going to fucking go insane. So just, it just kind of sucks. It's a real shitty season of life right now.
Yeah. back stuff is the fucking worst. And, yeah, but hopefully you're on the way to recovery soon and at least out of the pain. Cause I saw it firsthand on tour. We just got back from Portland and LA to amazing shows. Wonderful time with the Nash, but so it was painful watching you just trying to walk. I had to get you a lift for a literal 1 minute ride. The guy pulled up and was like, what are you just trying to scam me? Like, no, we need you to just take us to the end of the block.
So sad. But we did it, man. I mean, it was amazing. I was worried about it. Definitely against doctor's orders, but we did it. And those shows, I said to you before, I was like, you know what? I felt like the tour started so strong this year in Toronto. It was like, bomb, 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 bomb. Father Dick comes out. Father Dick's intro episode. And then I feel like we kind of, to my standards, tour wasn't quite, it was uneven from then on. And so I went in this week and being like, we got to find it. We got to get it back. And I don't know what it was, if it was just because everyone knew I wasn't feeling well, that everyone rose to the occasion or what, just the kind of stage magic. But both of those shows were such fucking home runs. The crowd in Portland was so amazing. And then we come to LA, smaller crowd. And I liked that show even better. I just felt like, you know, there was some magic going on in the room and so many wonderful people. That's why I love the meet and greet. It, like, you really get to get a hands on, like, face to face with the nation, see how impactful what we do, how it affects other people. And, it's not like you need that reminder, but man, it's always so wonderful to hear, like, how people going through tough times and whatnot and like what we do, how much it, like, it helps people. It's just a really, really nice reminder. And it's also nice to like get to talk to people and not be in character. You know what I mean? Like to be myself. And they're like, oh, you're actually kind of nice. I'm like, yeah, that's just all pretend. I'm like, I'm going to be mean in about half an hour. But I don't know. It's just a great weekend and a tough weekend. But I'm glad I did it. And now I don't want to leave my house for a month.
Yeah. Well, you earned it. All right. Let's talk about, we got some news. We got to get into the book one finale. Of the Vascata podcast, crazy. And of course, a chunky We Are Stupid that is really less about pointing out things we did wrong. In fact, I think they might be almost none. And really, it's more about learning the game. And there's some really good teachable moments here in this finale of book one that we can get into. And then we'll bang out a listener mail. So as far as news goes, light news week. We had talked about New York Comic Con. That is coming up on Friday. However, this injury is, you're on the IR. It is preventing you from performing at New York Comic Con this Friday, sadly. But the show must go on, and it shall continue. Amir from Marvel is one of the – I don't know what his official title is, but he has worked hand-in-hand with us in every meeting. He's, you know, on the publishing team at Marvel for the role-playing game, for the Marvel Multiverse role-playing game. He's going to GM Skid and Sydney and Matthew and Nick Lowe, right? Is this my understanding this correctly?
Yeah, I felt terrible, but during my awful night, I was like, I just, I don't want to, I don't need to push myself again. I did it 3 days removed from hernia surgery last year and regretted it. I was like, I can't do it again. I can't walk more than 5 feet without collapsing. I just don't think it's worth it. And so I had to tell them, I was like, guys, I can't do the show, but let's see how we can make this work. And so we went through a bunch of different options and they were like, what about Amir? And Amir like GMs a home game. And this dude like knows the rules.
When yeah, Sydney he and knows I, the game.
Sydney and I shot this like rules video for Marvel, which you haven't seen. If you haven't seen it yet, it's really fun. And it's kid friendly too, which is rare. We never do any kid friendly stuff. Sydney swore like a trooper and they had to cut it out. But anyways, Amir was offset, off camera, just like telling us little rules thing. Like he knows it so well. So I think it's going to be interesting to have a guy who like just knows the rules inside and out, work with the, you know, these performers who have decades of experience performing in front of a live crowd. I'll be sad to miss it, but Amir is going to crush it. Skid, Sydney, Nick Lowe, Matthew Capitacasa. Don't miss it.
And they all know Amir. Like, yeah. We have all been in multiple meetings with Amir. He's hung out with us at every show, so they're all excited, too. They know Amir and are excited for him to run. I do think that there might be a little bit of, like, I wonder if there's going to be any, you know, razzing going on. Basically, like, when a GM comes in to play it straight with the Glass Cannon Network, like...
It's like a substitute teacher.
Yeah, like a substitute teacher. Man, you get shredded. You get torn up. Not that they're going to be critiquing the GMing, but they are going to go off the wall with the adventure and make him work so hard to get it back on track. That is my prediction. I think it's going to be an amazing show. And yeah. If you're going to New York Comic Con or you can snag a ticket, you got to come by and check it out. Couple quick streams this week. We're back on Space Marine 2. Skid, Rob Kirkovich, and I. So fun. It is actually happening today. You're probably not going to see this until after it already happened, but you can go back and watch the VOD. And then tomorrow, getting the ladies back together. Me and the ladies, myself, Sydney, Mary Lou, and Paula Deming are all playing Overcooked tomorrow at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. Should be a wild ride. I'm looking forward to it. I've never played it before. Mary Lou says it's awful and she's going to be furious the entire time, and she said but it will make for a great show, so I'm looking forward to that. So
I can't believe you've never played it before. So I beat Overcooked 1.
I've heard of it for years and I've never even seen a screenshot of it.
Yeah, I played it by myself. I thought like, oh, this would be fun if you're playing with multiple people, but I played it by myself and it's fucking hard. The higher levels, early levels are easy, but every time there's like a new recipe, it takes you a little while to learn the ins and outs. But by the end, the final fight of Overcooked 1 takes 45 minutes and you don't know until 44 minutes in if you're going to complete it or not. And so I was playing with Archer because it was one of those like free games you get for being a PS Plus member. So a couple years ago, I was like, oh, great, I'll download this. And he loved just watching me play it. So we went all the way through the whole fucking game. In the end, you got to kill this like, or you got to defeat the spaghetti monster. And it's so crazy hard because you can't make more than like one mistake or you run out of time.
45 minutes?
Yeah, but it takes 45 minutes to get through the whole thing. It's crazy, but it'll be fun. If you guys are doing Overcooked 2, it's cool. I haven't beat that one, but I've made it pretty far. And it's definitely adds a bunch of new wrinkles that makes early levels a lot harder than the early levels in Overcooked 1. So thank you guys.
Yeah, I'm nervous. I mean, I have no idea what to expect. I think Mary Lou might be the only one who played it. Sydney might have dabbled. Paula definitely never has. And so I'm not sure how it's going to work, if it's going to be the four of us against the clock or if it's going to be like two chefs against two chefs. I'm not sure. We're going to
I don't know how you do it with four.
I think there's a versus mode. We're going to mess around with it. But I think we were talking about splitting up, you know, Paula and I, who had never played before it. So it would be like me and Mary Lou, Paula, Sydney, like, let's go. Chef on chef action. I don't know. It sounds really fun. I'm curious. We'll see. Dude, and you know why this is going to work? Because it's from the mind of McD. This is a mind of McD stream.
This is
McD? Like, the four of you should play Overcooked, and it would be a wild stream.
Oh, that's awesome. So, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So from the mind of McD, the twisted mind of McD, you're going to see some crazy shit. That's tomorrow, Thursday the 17th, 3 p.m. Eastern. Check that out live. All right, let's talk about the Glass Cannon podcast. Now,
can you make it through this?
I don't know, man. I'm struggling.
Telling an old lady.
Dude, it's just all up in my business. I am, I'm going to play this because I love Nick Lowe. This is We Are Stupid.
We are stupid.
I don't hear it, Joe.
Because you're not in there. Because separating these two things is not really something I feel like doing today. I want to talk through the episode, but as we go through it, I also want to bring up some of Professor Eric's points so that we kind of do it all at the same time, because this is what happens when you have a really combat-dominated episode. As I said, it is the end of book one. Crazy ending. Cannot believe we pulled it off. Wasn't starting a fight with your healer at dying two. Something we've never done before. And then, you know, it's hard enough. Your healer's at dying two. You're going to fight a Cairnwhite who is, you know, a really tough enemy. I will just say this. A Cairnwhite had a major part to play in the Blood of the Wild campaign. A horrifying creature. And then add into it this getting like sucked into the Iyudara or pushed into the Iyudara and getting stunned throughout the whole combat. So our actions getting stripped away from us. Really, really challenging encounter. And, you know, it makes sense. It's the end of the book. It's all coming to a head here. The fact that we pulled it off is astounding to me. And I'll start it off with Professor Eric's input on the hazard. This is an important teachable moment for me as well. He says, both the poisonous atmosphere and the rushing wind, which is the last one that we had on Eox, were hazards that could have been interacted with.
Yep.
This can be complicated since it is a single mega encounter without exploration mode. And even if someone was searching, they still wouldn't really get a chance to detect it ahead of time. However, I'd still like to recommend, this is Professor Eric, however, I'd still recommend to players always at least think about ways to interact with hazardous environments. Sure, sometimes it might be something you can't deal with, but sometimes it is, and it's probably at least worth an action early in the fight to find out.
Yeah, you could treat the hazard as an enemy and roll a knowledge check on the hazard, because oftentimes it'll be like, if you cover your mouth with a cloth, you get a +2 bonus to your fortitude save. Or there could be ways to disable the hazard, so that it doesn't affect anyone. But, you know, think of it as another enemy in the fight. That's especially for these ongoing complex hazards. It's just something, usually it's either or, right? You guys come into a room and there's a hazard. And so you roll those checks because you're like, how we got to stop this hazard before its routine ends. But when there's so much other stuff going on, you guys don't think of it as an enemy.
Exactly. And that was an incorrect assumption on our part. And I think that that's a really good lesson for players of PF2E is like always think about ways you can interact with a hazard, even if it's environmental. Because to me, it never occurred to me once. I just thought it's windy or the Iyudara is starting to do something that we are unable to prevent because of the change in atmosphere. And so it was a little bit. I was closing myself off, my mind off from what could have been. So, yeah.
It was just to disable it. It was a DC 20 thievery, as long as you're trained, or Arcana trained to recognize what's happening and craft a patch to block air from escaping through the portal. So like one of you could have rolled the knowledge check and then another action. So two actions, one action to roll the knowledge to learn that information. And then the second one to do it, and I think disable is multiple actions, right? We've done that before. My brain isn't working.
Yeah, but like it's
two actions.
Generally, it's two actions.
Yeah, so three actions, you wouldn't have to deal with that. But man, was that brutal. And also, because you guys were left like stunned one or stunned two, it was interesting. Like you were trying to make the most out of those little actions. But in retrospect, I think the best action for people would have been to like just move away from the Iyudara as far as you can. Because once you get adjacent to it, you're getting procced worse than if you're not adjacent to it. So if you were left with one action, rather than trying to attack every single round and then just keep staying adjacent, it would have been better to move 30 feet away, because now you got a couple rounds to maybe save and not get pulled, or at least not be adjacent to it.
But or at least not be stunned too.
Yeah.
Well, I said that this encounter wants you to leave the Iyudara. But the problem was we already had lost actions and we had all these little things like Brother Raimi is dying. Like, you know, Barnes had to stay there. We had a weapon on the ground. Like, Barnes had to stay there. There were like all these little things that like prevented that movement, even though.
So great.
I think I said that at one point. My memory of the episode is saying, the encounter wants you to move away from the Ayudara. And Matthew's like, would you want me to not heal you? And I was like, I know that you had no choice. I'm just saying, I think that this is what you're meant to do in order to lessen the penalties of this hazard. But it's still, after all that, never occurred to me that we could interact with and shut off the hazard during the fight. That would have been huge. especially if you consider spending those actions early on, doing it gives you more actions later by removing everybody getting stunned. I mean, it could have been huge. It could have been well worth the time spent trying to prevent that hazard or fix it, disable it, I guess I should say. all right, moving along. You know, Brother Ramius starts this fight at Dying 2. We have a chat early on about this could be a TPK. What are we all thinking? What are we all planning? Are we going to end this adventure? Kate's got a bunch of characters ready to go, whatever it is. And we are, you know, discussing how if only I die, if only Brother Ramius dies, you know, do I come in and play a healer again, a cleric again, et cetera, et cetera. So Professor Eric weighed in, as some people did in chat as well, on the viability of non-cleric healers. And so what Professor Eric says is, I've seen angelic sorcerer and forensic medicine investigator with the medic dedication work really well as a solo healer. I already am aware of this forensic medicine investigator. It is something I looked at closely should Brother Ramius go down. But it's interesting. I just don't think anything is close to a cleric. Prepared casters without divine font, that's the ability clerics have that gives them 4 free major heals a day, need to dedicate a lot of their top level slots or get a staff of healing, in my opinion, to keep up. So this is what Professor Eric is saying. It can be done by prepared casters, but you have to prepare all of your high level stuff as heals in order to be nearly as effective as a cleric. Or you can have a champion in the party to preemptively negate some damage. Now, this is where it gets interesting. In general, Professor Eric advises that a party consider 4 specific roles. This sounds more complicated than it is. Primary in-combat healer, secondary in-combat healer, primary out-of-combat healer, and secondary out-of-combat healer. So, in general, a primary in-combat healer needs to be deeply invested in medicine and have battle medicine or something with soothe or heal at max level. Either a spontaneous cleric caster or a cleric tends to work. A druid can, if you prepare a lot of heals. This is Suki in Strange Aeons. It's a druid who's preparing a lot of heal spells. That's your primary in-combat healer. However, that person need not be the primary out-of-combat healer. The primary out-of-combat healer needs a 10-minute spammable activity, such as battle medicine with continual recovery, like Brother Ramius has, or lay on hands, which every 10 minutes you can just refocus and get that back and heal again. So this is what we have in Blood of the Wild, is we have a lay on hands ability between combat, just bam, 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 bam. So that person is not viable for in combat. It'll work once in combat, but then you have to refocus. But out of combat, that works really great and keeps the action moving. You don't have to take half a day to heal the party just because you got beat up in one encounter. The secondary in-combat healer only has one job. Bring the healer back up if they go down. That's their only healer job. And so all they really need is a single heal spell prepared or something through the medic archetype that would get them, like a doctor's visitation, that would get them the ability to just bring that person up in a fight. And then secondary out-of-combat, you can see, is kind of like the primary out-of-combat. Just bring up the person who's the primary out-of-combat healer. So, it is interesting. Like, we have put all our eggs in the Brother Ramius basket. He is both the in-combat and out-of-combat healer. I love that. Love the character. Thoroughly enjoying it. However, it does mean when that person goes down, it's really bad, you know? So I love this layout from Professor Eric of having the primary in-combat healer, but also making sure you have somebody who has a heal spell or something like it, or always has a potion ready that is reserved for the healer. Should the healer go down, the primary healer go down in a fight?
Cool.
A lot. Yeah.
I mean, it's good. I mean, would you still feel like if you were to go down, you would want to bring in a full cleric? Or like, you know what's tricky is
no,
like-
No, I definitely would not.
If when Ramius dies, you kind of feel like you have to come in the healing role unless someone else dies. And then you'd be like, can you do the healing role? So would you go cleric again now? Or would you think you'd be more open to something else?
I would try something else.
Yeah. But yeah. with a healing
yes,
focus.
I would still believe that my responsibility to the party is as a healer. Because, you know, Kate said on air, she's just like, I think we should be chaotic. You should just do whatever you want. It's like, I mean, I guess the answer is what I want to do is not kill the rest of the party. Like, I would want to make sure that I am fulfilling my responsibilities to our group. Because at the end of the day, it's a pretty unforgiving combat system. You know, you really have to be on it, smart, playing well, and at least have roles covered. You don't have to have the same classes. You definitely don't have to be a cleric, but you need to have somebody that's ready to heal in a fight, or else you're going to be in trouble. And some of these other classes can do it. I just think that cleric is most effective. And look, if I had an idea that was awesome to bring in another cleric, I'd bring in another cleric. I enjoy playing Brother Ramius a lot. But it would have to be different. And sometimes it can be hard to just play the same class again, but make it totally different.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'd probably play a different class. But I would struggle with the idea of, you know, this, whatchamacallit, Paula runs into this in Blood of the Wild. It's like, Paula's an oracle, but like, basically had to become the healer because nobody else can heal. And so now you're an oracle and all you're preparing are just heal spells every day. So why not just be a cleric? You know what I mean? And you get so much extra benefits to the healing aspects. There are, you know, of course, but that's only if you're, you know, min-maxing, if you are going as optimized as possible. You know, if you are an oracle that's preparing heal spells, you also have a lot of interesting depth to your character that a cleric doesn't necessarily have. Curses and mysteries and all that kind of stuff is fun. And so, like, I get why you would want to do that. But as Professor Eric says here, you would still need to prepare heals as your top level slots in order to be an effective in combat healer. Yeah. But then somebody else can be the out of combat healer so that you don't have to spend all your other skills and abilities on out of combat healing. So that is an interesting combo that I hadn't quite put into words or thought of before. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate Professor Eric for laying it out.
Word.
All right, let's talk about dying and flat checks. We talked about how the flat checks are not modified. He says, you guys got this right after a lot of discussion. Flat checks are not modified. However, I brought this out. Professor Eric pointed this out to me because Professor Eric seems to know everything about every class. Player Core 2, ladies and gentlemen. The Player Core 2 has released something rather confusing and broken their own rule. The champion has a second level feat called Divine Health. Your faith makes you resistant to disease, protecting you as you offer to succor to the ill. You gain a +2 status bonus to saves against disease and poisons and to flat checks to recover from persistent poison damage.
Nice.
This is the first example of a bonus to a flat check. Typically, when you're doing like an aid on, you know, like a medical aid,
uh-huh,
you are reducing the DC of the flat check. That's what a success would get somebody, as opposed to adding a bonus. He says this new champion role probably should have been written as reduce the DC by 2, even if it is a little at odds with the normal practice of always explicitly listing what the DC is set to. I think they were trying to be judicious with the number. I think they were trying to be judicious with the number of words because it gives you a +2 status bonus to saves against disease and poisons. They just said and flat checks. Probably they should have said and reduce the DC of flat checks by blah, 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 because that would be more in line with the, you know, the way the game is built. So, yes, good to know. Flat checks never modified except if you have Divine Health as a remastered champion. all right. And then second to last thing, we'll go into Undead and Bleed. That was a tricky thing. There were comments on it on the YouTube where people were like, you have to go to this other page that specifically says globally, bleed never affects creatures that don't have blood or don't bleed,
yeah,
you know, and then.
Yeah, it's just like undead, unliving creatures don't bleed, but they don't give the bleed immunity to them, which is just It's kind of a silly oversight, I feel like. Just put bleed immunity in there.
I agree, and so does Professor Eric. He says, he says he believes they should have just put it in the immunities for these creatures. However, in the remaster, they have been explicit about adding bleed to the list of undead creature immunities explicitly, except for vampires. FYI, of course. Right. So there is some basis for some undead not being immune to bleed in the remaster. My personal opinion is that some undead constructs, plants, etc., should not be immune to bleed if they have something that motivates or powers them and is leakable. I tend to run it on a case-by-case basis. I think they should remove the qualifiers on bleeding damage type and solely rely on the immunities line, as that stops all arguments. The immunities line would stop all arguments, so just put it in there if you want it to be, you know, without question. Yeah, very interesting. And then Psyburst, you can only do when your psyche is unleashed. That was more of a narrative thing, though. I don't really care about that. And then Stunning Blows does have the incapacitation trait. It's listed in the text rather than in the traits of the feat because it's
what was that again? Sorry.
Stunning Blows, which is what allows Zephyr to get a possible stun if either of her flurry of blows hits.
Mm-hmm.
He says, yes, Stunning Blows has the incapacitation trait. It's listed in the text rather than on the traits of the feat. It's a little bit confusing. It's not in the traits of the feat, but it says in the text at the end of it, this has the incapacitation effect. Professor Eric says, since it's the strike granted by the spell, granted by the feat. So a little bit confusing there, but... there you go. All right. That was it for old We Are Stupid. Again, wild ending to like get back to where we needed to be and then push through. And then Kate's like, she's like, Lily's like, you must go now. And Kate's like, after we long rest. I mean, just amazing. And then she's like, get through there now. And we go through. And are you serious right now? Like another encounter? It's insane. It has to be social. We will see. But like banging on the door is coming down. And as you can see, I need your help. What an interesting start to book two. I'm curious. I'm not going to ask you today.
Yeah.
I'm curious if this is like
to talk about next week.
If how book two starts, if it's with like really this much pressure or if it's just you just rewrote it this way to keep the action going. I don't know. We shall see.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take it to listener mail before we get out of here. Let's hear from the Naish. Little listener mail.
What a fun season finale.
Yeah, for real. It's wild.
It's time for listener mail. Gotta get your brain up on it. Time for listener mail. You gotta cue that fucking
I'm pretending that I can hear it.
You're doing great. I mean, you really pulled it off. This one from Anne. Sorry, Anne.
With an E or just Anne?
Anne with no E, just A-N-N. I'm okay. Sorry I don't have a location right. For you. Anne writes in and says, hey, guys, I'm at the gym, humble brag, and thinking about training and skills and how much work it would take to actually train like some of these characters do. I've seen Sydney's Twitch trailer vid or maybe Instagram where she does a bit of sword work. And if I recall, Kate does some sort of martial arts. I think Matthew runs. Point being, do any of you have any skills beyond knowledge, wisdom, or lore that any of your characters have had? Does Joe know how to make jewelry? This is a skill that AWOL has in Blood of the Wild. Can anyone throw axes beyond places that have beer on tap? do you think it matters? Does it take away or bring anything to a character? So I'm curious, have you ever had a character, Troy, that you felt had skills that you actually have in real life?
I don't know.
You are as big as Roger Cumstone.
Right, obviously.
That's more of just Cumstone like a base physical trait.
Physique
though.
Is based on my current physique. I had a bard in your very short-lived Wrath of the Righteous campaign that was like a stand-up comedian, but he was like a really bad stand-up comedian. And my thought was like as he leveled up, he would get better. But we never got out of first level, I think. Maybe we leveled
Curse
up.
Curse of the Crimson Throne.
Curse of the Crimson Throne. When I say Wrath of Rice, yeah, Curse of the Crimson Throne. And so he had like performance stand up was his thing. And I know a lot of people do that, but I was, you know, I was doing stand up at the time. But in terms of like physical skills, no, I don't think I've ever, or like crafting things. I don't know if I've ever had any crossover.
No. AWOL in Blood of the Wild is an artist and a crafter of various things, a painter and a crafter. And yeah, I have none of those skills. I chose them because I wish I did. And so that's kind of a fun way to play it. I will say Foley from Legacy of the Ancients is a fisherman. And I am a fisherman. I do fish. I know how to fish really well. And so that is something that I've done
we
my whole
life.
We should
go fishing on tour one of these times. Like, do
God. I'd love to. Especially, like, we should have gone fishing in Oregon. You know what I mean? Like, that's fishing is amazing.
You know what I want to start doing Northwest. In 2025? I want, like, Saturday mornings. You and I go golfing. Wherever we are, let's just go golf. And like, we make it a thing. We're going to get
do
up.
Nine.
We're going to
do nine.
Yeah, maybe the back nine. But now we got to add some fishing in. You know, I got a lake right near my house that you could just fucking fish in. You're supposed to get a license, but nobody does.
That's awesome. Yeah. So anyway, that was one skill that I definitely did have. I will say, you know, bards as well. So you had a bard that was a stand-up comedian. If you'll recall, in Raiders of the Lost Continent, I played Azura, who I brought in, a bard, and her bardic skill was oratory. And that is a skill that I have, that I was trained in, you know, so trained in storytelling, public speaking, that kind of thing, very specifically trained in that. So I built that character because I knew what that would mean in terms of what her training would be. Other than that, I mean, I am not trained at all in martial arts. I'm not trained at all in sword play or anything like that. I don't know. Atticus, I read a lot. Atticus reads a lot. But yeah, it is tricky, especially when you get into the more magical classes, what people might be good at. But yeah, that's funny. What about any of your characters before? No, right? Oh, whatchamacallit? Ron Powerhouse was an actor.
Ron Powers was an actor, and I had a martial artist monk, and I did martial artists for a long martial. I did martial artists. I did a bunch of fucked a bunch of martial arts. No, I did martial arts for years, after my karate in the shower days. But I think that like I definitely try to bring myself to a lot of the characters, but I don't think of it in terms of skills so much as like flavor. Like so much of Roger Comstone in those early Epps, when he's talking about New York and living in a townhouse owned by two gay guys, like that's all stuff that I did. Like all those little places he goes to, they're all like, I sometimes want to take a picture when I'm like on 92nd, Broadway or 92nd and West End Avenue. Like this is Roger Comstone's actual apartment building, to show people because those are all based on reality. But in terms of like actual skills, I never really think about that.
Yeah, I do bring not a ton, but I bring a decent amount to Brother Ramius of the like the Catholic upbringing. You know what I mean? Like all of the pomp and circumstance, the mass, the church, all the like the little trinkets and things that you become part of the ritual. I think it's something that I always think about with him and the the classic like the cassock with the necklace with the big symbol hanging down on it and everything. Obviously, these are like images from books and media and stuff, but they're also things that I grew up with. I mean, these were the paintings on the walls. These were the stained glass windows where like the old priests in the brown cassocks with their like, you know, bald shaved heads at the top. All these images come from my childhood. Sir Will was more of like my love of Martin, George R. R. Martin and knighthood and all that stuff that you get from those books. But not like personal physical skills, I would say. I guess Foley really stands out. You know what? And Averxius, I really love Averxius because I had this epiphany years ago. I think it was through like Chris Merwin, our old GM or something like that. Kind of like it really sort of ferreting out the difference between devils and demons in a D&D standpoint, the difference between lawful evil and chaotic evil. And I love playing Averxius because I just sort of play him like your worst imagining of the military or the government, basically, because it's just like primarily, especially like totalitarian government, right? Where it's like the idea, to me, it's so easy to wrap your head around and easy to execute in character, is that there is a law and an order and a way that things should be.
The Gore
and
Hammer.
The way that those things should be is that the strongest people are in charge. And why wouldn't they be? Because they can just kick the shit out of anybody that complains. And so this is like, to me, it's so fun to play because it's so, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a satire on the world. You know what I mean? Like, you try to believe that, like, all of these people that aren't evil are in charge. Like, they're all somewhat evil. You know what I mean? Like, to get to that tier, you have to be willing to squash the weak. And so, anyway, I have a lot of fun with that. It all comes from my experience in real life and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
How we inspire these guys. You got anything else before we bounce, buddy? I think that's it for me.
No, I've been playing. I was telling you I was playing the Elden Ring DLC, but I'm not streaming it because
you
I'm
haven't
not,
been streaming anything, man.
I know.
Everybody's mad.
I can't commit to it by the time the schedule comes out. There are some days I'm like, oh, yeah, I could stream today, but I never have like 2 hours to just bang it out. And also, I'm not myself. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, right now, certainly not.
Yeah, I delivered for Portland and LA, but that took everything. Like, I got nothing. I got nothing else. Left. But I was saying to you, I just think the DLC is the most beautiful fucking DLC I've ever played, and it's so massive.
It's good.
So massive. I'm like, I've got to be 20, 30 hours in, and I'm still not at the halfway point of the DLC.
Yeah. I wish they would have just called it Elden Ring 2.
Right.
It's like, I don't know why I wish that, but like it is that. It is an entire additional experience that is so epic and amazing and adds so many different wrinkles and details to the gameplay.
New trying weapons, to finish new it armor. Though, because Call of Duty comes out in 9 days and I want to move on. That's
Are
my
you going to stream multiplayer Call of Duty?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe for Extra Life. I'm leaning towards that. Unless the reviews for Dragon Age are just so fucking unbelievable, then maybe I'll pivot. But like, Call of Duty is my like late October through the holidays game because I can play like 10 minutes a pop. It's the perfect game for like families here and I need to duck away for a second. And I don't know. It just reminds, like I say it every year, reminds me of the holidays because it always comes out like right before November 1st.
Awesome. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this week. Thank you so much for listening to the fun hangout. Sorry it was a little late, but, you know, it happens. We got a lot coming up. Very excited for you to check out the start of Book 2 tomorrow night. No break in between. Book 2 begins tomorrow, 8 o'clock Eastern, right on YouTube, right here on YouTube. And then, yeah, of course, more and more exciting stuff to come as we get deeper into the fall and closer to the holidays. We will be back soon. Take it easy, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week. Peace!
Do you like what you hear? Well, then it's time to make your membership official. You can start your 30-day free trial today and become an official member of The Nation at jointhenation.com with the promo code GCN30. That's jointhenaish.com and use code GCN30. That's GCN30 to gain access to exclusive podcasts, ad-free episodes, and live streams you can't find anywhere else. Once again, it's jointhenaish.com. Use code GCN30 at sign up to get your first 30 days for free. See what everybody else is talking about and join the Nation today.